6-1, Portugal destroying Switzerland in the round of 16 of the World Cup this morning. Cristiano Ronaldo came off the bench. His replacement scored a hat-trick. His replacement in the starting side, that is. Goncalo Ramos, hat-trick. So easy win there for Portugal this morning. And they'll play Morocco now in the quarterfinals. So all the quarterfinals are set. Morocco shock Spain 3-0 in a penalty shootout after the match finished scoreless after the 120 minutes. So your quarterfinals are in, and all four. Croatia, Brazil, 2 o'clock Saturday morning. Brazil $1.38. Very short favourites. Then 6 o'clock Saturday morning. Argentina, $2.20 favourites against the Netherlands, who are $3.50. The draw, $3.20 with TAB. Ah, the big one. Sunday morning, 6 a.m. England, $3. France, $2.40. The draw, $3.20. That, of course, is the 90-minute market. And TAB just putting up a market now, I'm sure, for the Portugal-Morocco game. And that is 2 o'clock on Sunday morning. So the two games Saturday and then Sunday morning. And to decide the semi-finals at the World Cup. And we've got Shane Watson coming up shortly. Second test tomorrow, Australia and the West Indies at Adelaide Oval. Also saw yesterday, Clarkie, Nathan Lyon was asked about England's Bazball revolution. And while giving credit to Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum and acknowledging its excitement, he says the Aussies have their own ways of playing and it's going okay. And I can't help but think, you know, England, you know, it's great, so positive, exciting, etc. But I'll tell you what, if it's overcast conditions at Old Trafford or, you know, one of those venues in Northern England next year, and there's a bit of grass on the pitch, I don't think there'll be too much Bazball going on.
Yeah, look, again, I think the way at the end of the day, how they played that test match against Pakistan, they deserve a lot of credit for that. They stepped foot onto that field and said, we're here to win. We're happy to take whatever risk it takes. We're happy to risk losing. And they made 500 day one of the test match. So that tells you two things. It's an absolute road, lightning fast outfield. But their intent was to try and create a win in Pakistan. So, yeah, I think we should be paying them the respect that they deserve. But, yeah, I think it might be different against Australia, that's all. Let's wait and see. And Lino, like, he can't win there. He's got to obviously respect England are playing good and, you know, they're winning games of cricket. But he's also, you know, in the same breath saying, we'll be okay. We'll be fine. And I think Australia, I think this is Australia, as good a chance Australia has in a long time to beat England in England. We levelled the series there last time. I think we are in a better place. We're more experienced. More guys have played in those conditions. At the moment, our batting is on fire. Guys are making runs and big runs, and we've got lots of experience in that top order. And I'm sure our bowlers will be licking their lips if they see conditions that are going to swing around. Like, at the end of the day, if you compare both teams, and again, I know I'm emotionally attached, I know I'm biased to the Australian team, but if I look at both teams, individual players versus individual players, we are a better team than England. There is absolutely no doubt about it. Hmm. We are a better team. And, mate, the fact we've got a genuine frontline spinner that can win us a game of cricket, that puts us a long way in front of England in any conditions in the world. So we need to be playing at our best in England against a really positive team, but I think we can win that series. But right now, I do think England deserve credit for the change of attitude. You know, they same players, just change their attitude, and they're playing much better cricket.
Just seeing some NFL news here, Loz. Adam Schefter, the newsbreaker for ESPN, says Baker Mayfield, who was just released by the Carolina Panthers, claimed by the LA Rams, the Super Bowl champions. They inherit the remaining $1.35 million on his contract. He's expected to fly to LA and could play in the Friday game our time here against the Las Vegas Raiders. So Baker Mayfield, another chance, I guess, because Matt Stafford, their quarterback, I don't think he's going to play for the rest of the season. He's battling concussion issues.
But they're struggling
and
this year,
they're going
aren't they?
No good. Yeah. So why play your main quarterback who's suffering those issues, giving the rest of the season off? They're not going to obviously make a splash this year. It's probably been one of the worst Super Bowl defenses ever. Yeah. So Baker Mayfield in, I suppose.
Well, he's been given a lot of chances, Baker Mayfield. I'd reckon this would be his last one, Middo, if he wants to continue in the NFL, because he comes with a bit of baggage as well. All the teams that he's played with. I don't think he's left on good terms. So a big opportunity for him to see whether he can improve the Rams. But the way they're going at the moment, they are struggling. And if you look at where they're sitting, they're at the bottom of the NFC West. They've only won three games. They're not going to make playoffs this year. So it's just an opportunity for Mayfield to try and, get his career going again, or, help the Rams try and win a few games. But this won't be a long-term thing. This is just an opportunity for him to try and pick up a new club for next season.
I hope you speak to Shane Watson shortly, but as we just try and get him on the line, I was just thinking before, Clarkie, we were talking earlier this morning about, as it's been reported today, Nathan Lyon on the verge of breaking the record of Shane Warne for most wickets at Adelaide Oval. And I was just thinking of some of the great spells there at Adelaide Oval, and you were involved, I'm thinking, in the last 20 years, and you were involved one way or another in all three that I'm thinking of. Obviously, the Warney spell in the last morning of Amazing Adelaide in the 06-07 series. There was also, you won't want to remember this, but day one Adelaide 2010-11, what were we, 3-for-2, pup? James Anderson, I think. I think Simon Caddish got a diamond duck. Do you ever have a diamond duck?
No. What, diamonds run out without facing a ball?
Without facing a ball, yeah.
Yeah, no, I never got one of those. I got golden duck out first ball, I think, twice in one day cricket. I didn't get a golden duck in test cricket. I got lots of ducks, though. But no, I didn't get run out without facing a ball.
Yeah.
Thank God.
To be a low moment. And also, how could you forget Mitchell Johnson, 2013-14? I mean, to see that close up, because, I think a lot of us remember that vividly. And you could feel through the TV the fear of the England batsman.
Yeah, on a good batting wicket
as
well.
On a decent batting wicket. I mean, what was it like close up to watch Mitchell Johnson at full flight and full confidence, because, he was one of those cricketers that could really drift as far as his confidence was concerned. But in that series, he was borderline scary and unplayable.
Yeah, Warney's spell against England that won us that test match is the best spell I've ever seen. That I ever played with.
Yep.
That's not fair either, because I didn't go around and ask every player. 90% of the players on that field, I could say 99%, but I'll say 90, thought we couldn't win that test match. Warney 100% thought we could win that test match, and he knew how to do it as well. He just had to bowl. So that spell was phenomenal, and that was the best spell I ever saw in my career. Mitch, lethal. I think the one thing about Mitch Johnson was when he got it right, he was as unplayable as any bowler you faced. Left arm, could swing it away, was aggressive, had a really fast bouncer. Pace-wise, he was 145, 150 could be. Angle away to the right-hander, which brought slips into play. His bouncer, or that back of a length, was always at your ribs, so that man under the helmet at bat pad or a leg gully was always in the game. And, he had a nasty streak, Mitch. When he wanted to, he could really stick it up you, and he was quick enough, that's for sure. And that series, I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And the boys around him, like I've said, I think I've said that 1,000 times. I think, the job that Ryan Harris, Peter Siddle, Nathan Lyon and Shane Watson did allowed us to use Mitch Johnson in a way that I think we probably worked out that was him at his best. Short spells, aggressive with attitude, no fear of where it was going to go out of his hand. And in that series, he got it perfect. So, there were a number of the England batsmen petrified, I can tell you right now. And our goal to the tail was exactly that. We were not attacking the stumps at all. We were getting blokes caught off their glove, caught in that bat pad, leg gully region. Mitch was not, and none of the quicks were going to pitch the ball up. So we had a real aggressive approach to our attitude because we felt that was the best way to win that series in Australian conditions. And all the boys were brilliant, but Mitch was, he was lethal, mate. Thank God we were on his team and not playing against him, put it that way.
And I guess that's what, when I look at this attack now, and as good as they are, it's just the one thing we're missing is that absolute, I guess, fear factor. I know Mitchell Starc at his best could be
I think it's just how we're using our bot. Like right now, I think we're very same. We're using Mitchell Starc the same as Pat Cummins, the same as Josh Hazlewood. You bowl your 5 or 6 overs spell. If you get a couple of wickets, you can bowl 7 overs. The other quick bowls the other end. We'll bring on the third quick as our first change bowler. And then if we don't have much joy, we'll bring the spinner on. Like, there's not enough. There is so much variation in how they bowl. We're just not using it. You know, and I'm not saying use Mitchell Starc the same way as I use Mitchell Johnson. That mightn't be right for Starkey either. But I think someone like Starkey has to bowl the first over. He swings the ball better than the other blokes. Give him one over. If it doesn't swing, rip him off. You might bring Nathan Lyon on in the third over of a test match if it's conducive. You might bring Cameron Green because you think there's a bit more. This pitch is better for seam than swing. You know, I think you can. They are very different bowlers, but they seem at the moment same. The four quicks, the three fast bowlers, and our all rounder, in my opinion, all seem same. But they're not. They're all very different. But I just think we're not capitalising on that enough. And now we've got a spinner, Nathan Lyon. Mate, he can bowl over the wicket, round the wicket, to a left-hander, to a right-hander, with a brand-new ball, last over of the day. Lyon can bowl at any stage of the game. He's confident enough now. We need to utilise that, in my opinion.
6-1 this morning, so Portugal over Switzerland at the World Cup. We're going to speak to Timmy Clark shortly. Acceptances for the $2 million The Ingham on Saturday. And the old Villiers, $2 million. And you get the ticket, of course, through to the Doncaster next autumn as well. Timmy's got a decent hand there today at Warwick Farm also, so plenty to ask him about. And Riadini, he'll be on. He was locked into Riadini after winning the gong. And then, of course, he rode Dajram, which won the festival stakes as well. So, good to have options, isn't it? And another good year for Timmy Clark. So looking forward to having a chat with him. Just also, we mentioned earlier, with Bulldog here, it was confirmed overnight, and we mentioned it yesterday, that Eddie Jones has been sacked by England overnight as their rugby coach, 9 months out from the Rugby World Cup. So he won 5 of 12 tests this year. Gee, we probably would have taken that. So he is, it's incredible when you think about it, because he is the most successful
England
coach.
Why is he being sacked then, Middo?
I think he can get on the nerves of executives, put it that way. So I think it's more than just wins and losses when it comes to Eddie. He has his way of doing things. But yeah, you look at it. So since coaching that side, 73% win-loss ratio. Next best for England, Jack Rowe from 94 to 97. Even Sir Clive Woodward, who won them a World Cup, 71%. So Eddie Jones, the most successful by winning percentage England coach of all time, has been sacked. So he and Scott Robertson, who's a lot says the best coach in New Zealand, are available at the moment.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go, because one of the reasons why Eddie was under a little bit of pressure, obviously they weren't winning, but he had a lot of critics, and a lot of those critics were ex-coaches of England and also ex-players. So they were jumping on the Eddie Jones bandwagon trying to get rid of him because they think it should be an English coach that coaches the national team.
Loz, is this not another example of, like, you know, I think a lot of people made the fuss about when Justin Lane got sacked from the cricket team, that his success rate, winning wins versus losses, was unbelievable. Is this not another example that maybe, you know, maybe it's not just about the wins and losses?
I think it must be, because over long term, his record is very, very good. But you look at 2022, he's only won 5 tests from 12. And I know that Eddie rubs people up the wrong way, and he believes in a system, and he doesn't deviate from that system. And he's very hard-nosed. And
Lang's a little bit like that as well.
And I think he has his critics out there, and in particular, people that have been a part of the setup before that possibly don't, and they're waiting for an opportunity to kick the Aussie.
Yeah, okay.
You know, over there in England.
And, definitely.
And because of his personality and the fact that he doesn't get on with those people, I think that is more sort of layers on top of it as well. So they were really trying to sort of oust Eddie, and there was a lot of commentary surrounding his performances this year, and they were just waiting and biting their lip until he started to have have a dismal sort of season, which they've had this year by their own standards. So I think that that's contributed to the pressure, and the rugby union over there have thought, geez, you know, we need to act here because our season hasn't been great. We're starting to get a bit of pressure. And you know how boards operate at times. You know, they don't stick solid. They're
do you
very
think they go to their own, Middo? Do you think they go to the old theory, like we speak about it with all sports, does the England coach need to be an Englishman or woman? Is there a bit of that happening?
Well, certainly when Loz is right, over there, when they have a lean run and they're looking at an Aussie and, you know, an abrasive Aussie, as Eddie Jones can be his coach, they get offside very quickly. And that's what's happened here.
Because we'll take the 5 wins out of 12, wouldn't we?
Oh, probably.
The Wallabies.
Yeah, probably. Definitely this year in hindsight. Anyway, we're going to talk some racing. Joining us now as we preview the Ingham there at Randwick on Saturday is Tim Clark. Tim, good morning.
Good morning.
So you committed to ride Riadini after the gong. I mean, how much sleep did you lose about that after Dajran's win in the Festival Stakes heading towards this race on Saturday?
Yeah, it's a shame that they have to meet, but obviously I understand that with the prize money and they're both on that target. I suppose Dajran, if he didn't win on didn't win the festival, he probably wouldn't have made the field. So they're both quite impressive their last starts, but just feel Riadini, maybe his form's just got a little bit more depth at the moment, and I guess that he's been a bit more consistent, I guess, over the time that he has been out here. If, you know, some of them big mile races that he's running gets stinkered over and very elegant. So that's pretty deep form. So he seems to be back in that sort of vein of form as well. So it's pleasing to see.
Were you committed to Riadini, Timmy, or did you just make that decision after they both raced?
I had my mindset on riding Riadini, and that was my sort of gut feel and my first thought. So I just stuck with that rather than trying to, I guess, overcomplicate it and overthink it too much.
Tim, what do you make of this, I guess, rebrand of the old Villiers $2 million race? And, of course, honouring a family that's had such an impact on racing and in the community with the money they've raised and what they've done there as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fantastic race, and obviously great to have the Ingham name behind it. Obviously with not only the prize money, but now that you've got the ballot into the free pass at the Doncaster next year as well. So, if you can win it, you're not having to then rely on trying to win a lead-up run or getting your ratings up as well. So looks like it's going to be a fantastic race. There's plenty of depth. There's going to be horses that don't make the field. So whenever you get a race and there's good horses not making the field, it means it's very strong. So I'm sure it's going to be very competitive on Saturday.
Yeah, how'd you rate your sprint campaign, Timmy? And do you get a chance to have a break at all over the summer, or do you just keep riding through?
Yeah, I thought the spring was really good. I was really happy with how it all panned out. I spent a lot more time in Melbourne this year than I have previously. Well, obviously, with COVID, I wasn't there the last couple of years. But even before that, I spent a lot more time down there this year, and I think that was really good for me as far as getting to know the tracks and everything a lot more. And I think it'll be good for myself going forward, and to have some good success down there. Obviously, headlined by Alligator Blood was fantastic. So I'll ride till about the 17th, and then might put the queue on the rack for a few weeks and come back and get ready for Magic Millions.
And I guess Riadini on the draw today. I mean, it had a middle gate in the gong. Where do you think he's most comfortable in the run, Tim? Because he obviously can be up there on speed, or he can just sit off them, or is it very much barrier dependent for him?
He definitely likes to race up or near the speed somewhere. Yeah, it's just a bit tricky at Kembla with the wind was sort of playing a bit of havoc, and it was a track that it was really hard to sort of be on the inside and be in the finish. So not that we, or not that I intentionally sort of ended up where I did. It was just the way the rain handed out a bit with those. There's probably a bit more speed than I anticipated, and then when I was, although I was a bit wide, I was getting sort of cover from the wind down the side there, so I wasn't too worried about covering a bit of ground on that day. But yeah, that was one of his best efforts, and looking at his previous best efforts, it's been at Randwick over a mile when he's led and he's rolled along and run them along and made them chase. So, if he can get that set up on Saturday, he's going to be hard to beat. Obviously, I think there's a 20-horse field. So, just with due to the size of the field, there's going to be some pressure there. And, we just have to see where we draw. But he'll be heading in a forward direction, no doubt.
What about today at Warwick Farm, mate? Is there anything you're riding that you can steer our listeners into?
I think the two-year-old in the first.
Deciduous.
Deciduous, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's a real little pro that has done everything right at the trial. So I thought that it looks a good race for him. He's well trained up, and as you'd expect with Gain Adrian's two-year-olds, he's ready to go today. And I think he'll give a really good account for himself. He'll be hard to beat. And way to the stars. Gets back to his home track at Warwick Farm where he won first up, and he was one of them horses that spoke about at Kembla meeting. He was on the inside, and it was probably a bit of a disadvantage for him for where he drew there. And so I think he's probably a deserved favourite and should be hard to beat as well.
Okay, for our listeners, both those horses' favourites today at the farm that Tim's mentioned, race 1, number 1, Deciduous, and race 6, number 4, Way to the Stars. Tim, hope today goes well, and Saturday, particularly with Riadini as well. Thanks so much.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, guys.
We've got Shane Watson coming up shortly. Now, I was just earlier with Bulldog. You made a comment about that you can see a woman coaching an NRL side within a decade. You can see it happening.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I reckon 15 years. Mm. I reckon 15, 20 years, you'll get a female head coach. I think you'll start to see females being on coaching staff sooner than later. I think within probably the next five, 10 years, you'll start to see some females. You see it over there in the NFL now. And I think we start to see it in the AFL, where females are now getting an opportunity. And again, I don't want to put a female in there just because she's a female either, by the way. I don't want to see that happen. But what I'd like to see, an opportunity for females to learn their trade, and if they've got aspirations of being assistant coaches, head coaches, then there should be a pathway there for them. Mm. So I think that's an area that we can look at. And I reckon we will see it. There's no doubt with NFLW, not NFLW, NRLW, that there's more opportunities now for women to play the game. So with that will come opportunities to coach. We've already seen referees and linesmen and lineswomen get an opportunity in the NRL. So I think it's inevitable that it happens. Now, I don't know what the time frame is, but I reckon within probably 5 or 10 years, we'll start to see females on coaching staffs at NRL clubs. I really do believe that. Now, that will lead to the possibility of them becoming head coaches, and that might be 10, 15, 20 years down the track, but I can see it happening.
Time to talk some cricket, and joining us now, well, he was an all-rounder for Australia across all three formats from 2002 to 2016, old teammate of Pups, of course, and president of the Australian Cricketers Association, and recently has released a book called Winning the Inner Battle. Shane Watson joining us. Shane, good morning to you.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on the show, and congratulations on the book. Now, what was the catalyst, Shane, for writing about the mental side of the game?
The catalyst for me to write this book is really all around an education that I got very late in my career, in 2015, from a guy from the US called Dr. Jacques Dallaire, just around the mental skills side of life. And it was around a time where I was struggling performance-wise because of one thing in particular, that sort of my mental environment really changed. And I was fortunate enough to get connected into Dr. Jacques Dallaire through Will Power, the Aussie IndyCar champion who just won this season of IndyCar. And he connected me in after wrestling with pretty similar things from a mental skills perspective. And the education that I got, I spent 2 days with Jacques Dallaire over in the US, and immediately he turned me around. The information that he gave me was information I hadn't heard before in and around the cricket pathways and that. So by then applying it over the next sort of 4 years of me playing more, so I only played a little bit of T20 cricket for Australia, and then I played T20 leagues around the world, then applying this information was a revelation. So that's why I knew this information isn't really out there readily available, so that's the reason why I put this book together, just to be able to try and get this information out to as many people as possible, because I wish I knew this information when I was sort of coming through. A number of times throughout my career, I fell into the right mindset, but it wasn't something that I really directed, not compared to even someone like Pup, who's a lot more, had more of a mental understanding than I did, especially in around test cricket, we had to concentrate for longer periods of time. So skills that I was able to learn, now it's just put into a book so other people can get access to this really simple information. But it really just gets you thinking about the way that you do from the things that you are in control in from a mental skills perspective.
Watto, congrats on the book, buddy. I know this is something that you always felt, even when you were playing, that you wanted to give back to, whether it was younger players or the current crop of Australian players. And I guess, you know, everyone always talks about the mental side of the game, but I feel like you with this book have gone, you've actually gone a lot deeper to, everyone says it, but no one actually does work on it. Do you think the current players are doing more work on it? Do you think there is still a lot of room for improvement? And from your perspective, mate, how important is this in our sport, in cricket?
Yeah, I think things are getting better. People are definitely talking around the mental side of the game and just mental health in general as well. So it's definitely, people are talking more, but just in general with my experience and even coaching over the last year or so as well, it's not something that people really get under the surface and talk deeply about, like what their thoughts are, what's going on in their mind and why those thoughts are coming in. I certainly never ask these questions. I asked you a couple of times, Pup, more so around how to get through the nervous 90. You just said, my goal is 150. So why would I get nervous in 90s? Because I'm actually trying to get to 150. So even things like that around your perspective has so much power. But you're not, innately, some people just naturally have those skills and fall into those skills, whereas I certainly didn't. There was always a challenge to be able to work through what I needed to do. Again, it's something that people are getting a bit more education on, but I still feel, just even with the current crop of cricketers that I've been around, it's still something that's not really there. Yeah. Again, which is the reason why I just want to try and get this book out there. So just to give my perspective across of like this information I was fortunate enough to get to be educated on, just to, even if it's just a conversation starter, so people then try and go and source more information if they need to, around how to be able to try and master the mental skills side of the game, because it's just something that I know there's so much more room to move and growth to be had. We've pushed the limits of technique, the physical side of the game, we've been pushing the limits for quite a while, but from a mental skills and a mindset perspective, we haven't really scratched the surface, I don't believe, with my experience.
No, I think you're right there. And I think sports are evolving all the time. And I think this is something that will continue to only get stronger. And the more we talk about mental health, the better the people will be. But just from your experiences and this book, does it focus on more of the positive way of thinking, or does it show you techniques to deal with negative thoughts that come into your mind? And, you know, there's times all sportsmen go through the highs and the lows. So from your perspective, Shane, do you concentrate on positives, or is it a combination of both?
Well, it's the main thing that it talks about is the correct mindset and the correct thoughts. What is the right thoughts for you to have to when you're at your best and understanding that. And majority of the time, like all the time, it is positive, but it's just the right positive thoughts, the right thoughts that you need in your mind at the right time. So, and then understanding if and when a negative thought does come in, the control that you can, that you do have to redirect those thoughts to the right thing at the right time. So, so that's really a big part of what the book is all about, is just understanding what the correct mental environment and the correct thoughts for you are at any moment in time. And the only way that you really, that you do understand that is by defining, especially the best version of you. And that's the one thing that I never did. Technically, I did understood what the best version of me was, but the mental side of it, I never did until I actually went through this process with Jacques Dallaire and really deeply defined the best version of me on my bed day. So then every time I stepped out to play, I knew exactly what I was chasing. I knew what I was chasing from a technical perspective, but now I understood from a mental perspective what mental environment every single ball that I needed to get into and the right thoughts to be able to then bring the best version of me every single ball, and just doing it over and over again. So those two things in particular are really just the genesis of and the core of this book.
We get a lot of messages and calls about the current Australian team and where they're at around support from the Aussie fans. I'm keen to get your perspective as president of the Players Association. You're very close to the players still. You spend a lot of time with them, and you actually know, you know, the quality of people that they are. But why, in your opinion, do you think the Aussie fans are just off the team a bit? They just haven't got that following that I think Australian cricket has had over a long period of time in this country?
Well, this is my opinion more so than what I know inside. But my opinion is Australians always, the public in general, like the Aussie fighters, just for the Aussie team and Aussie people in general, just to be able to always, no matter what, when chips are down, they can see that there's that fight going on, that the team is really pushing no matter what. And I think that, even from my perspective in the T20 World Cup, just to see the way we sort of went about it, we just didn't have that real intensity and that real desperation every moment to be able to do what you need to do to be able to try and get across the line. Obviously, not pushing the limit legally, but obviously just from an intensity point of view. And there was only really, for me, a few moments where you could really see how much it meant to a few of those players in particular. And for me, that's really what the Australian public have always. They just want to see people having a crack, and no matter what. And I know things had to be really nice because of, you know, the situation that occurred a number of years ago, that they had to sort of right the ship in the right direction. But nice is great, but you also want to show that intensity in that, and you want to see that fighting spirit as well. So that for me is, I think, what the Australian public has always loved watching, and that's what I love watching as well.
Yeah, I as a cricket tragic, like many of our listeners, just hate the scheduling at the moment, and I think that's got the most impact on interest, Shane, is just the lack of context to all these games that are being played. I mean, it's the million-dollar question, isn't it? How do we solve this? Because you could see it. I went to that game at the SCG the other week, Australia and England, and it had no context, and the fans voted with their feet accordingly. I mean, how do we solve this?
Yeah, well, that's why you can see franchise cricket in general around the world starting to put so much heat on the scheduling, because franchise cricket, there's always something riding on every game, just about. And that's why when there's one World Cups, one-day World Cups, T20 World Cups, whether there's Champions Trophies that Pup and I played in, or even a World Test Championship, where every Test match is something riding on it. And that's really, that's what everyone wants to play in, because there's context, there's something right on every game, but also from the people who are watching, they can see through when the people are just going through the motions a little bit as well, because there's nothing really riding on that game. So that's where the franchise cricket that's really starting to ask a few questions around context and around the world, that's where, you know, that momentum's really starting to speed up and will come at us very quickly.
Well, we appreciate your time, mate, and again, congratulations with the book, and for all our listeners who want to get an insight into winning the inner battle and helping to eliminate stress and anxiety to perform, it doesn't just apply to cricket, does it, Shane? Across all forms of life, you can apply this.
Oh, absolutely. The examples in the book are my cricket examples, good and bad, how I use information, how I certainly didn't use the information as well. But the fundamentals of the information, of the mental skills, are universal across all aspects of your life, because in the end, we're always performing in every aspect of our life. So it'll give people just more of an understanding of how to be able to bring the best version of themselves. And just while I'm here as well, the only way you can get my book as well is through my website, shanewatson.au. I am self-publishing it, so it's not in the bookstores. The only way you can get it is online through my website, shanewatson.au.
Okay, so Shane Watson, that's .au, is it? Yeah, shanewatson.au. Okay, mate. Thanks for your time, mate. Enjoy and chat soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks. Great to chat to you guys. Thanks.
Hey, Ronaldo watched this morning. So, Loz, what have you noticed here? Because there's a lot going around after, by the way, Portugal beat Switzerland 6-1. But we're seeing a spoil sport.
Oh, mate, he's carrying on.
A whinger, a sulker.
He's carrying on. So the team are celebrating out there on the pitch near the goals and supporting their fans. They've gone over to the fans.
Yeah, this is post-match.
And Ronaldo, he's back at the bench.
Yeah, just on his Pat Malone.
He's just walked away. So...
not happy, is he?
Yeah, he's not happy, but that's not great. That's not good when you're at a World Cup. You're into the quarterfinals. Ouch. The team's just had a massive victory. So, I don't know.
Trouble?
I don't think they're happy. The coach made a statement before the game, didn't he? That's the reason why he started him on the bench, for what he said to the previous game.
Gee, they're looking good, Paul. You'd think.
They play well.
Because they've got Morocco now in the quarters. The winner of their quarterfinal plays the winner of the England-France quarterfinal. So you're looking at probably Portugal v, say, well, I'm going to say France. And then potentially, and I'm sure I'll get maybe more than one of these wrong, Brazil, I think, will beat Croatia, based on what we saw yesterday. Argentina that good? If they're on their heels very late against, you know, we did so well, of course.
They've got the Netherlands.
They've got the Netherlands.
Netherlands.
Or you'd love to see Brazil. Can you imagine Brazil and Argentina in a World Cup semi-final? I mean, that is just
massive.
As big as it gets. So that's, you'd love to see that.
Yeah.
And, so the best of South America against the best of Europe. Maybe that's where we're looking. Anyway, what a conclusion we've got. We've got Dave Stanley concluding the show this morning for us. DS, good morning. As he'll be with us in about 20 seconds as he's getting set up in there.
DS, a fan of the football? Is he watching the World Cup, you reckon? Or Harvey Norman?
He might be Harvey.
He doesn't seem like a football fan.
I don't think he would be.
Is he sporty DS or what?
Yeah, he loves his footy. He loves his
rugby
cricket.
Rugby league?
Yeah,
he loves his para. Dragon.
Para. No, he's
Dragon. Cricket? I don't reckon he loves his cricket.
He loves his cricket. I don't know whether he'd be into soccer. I don't know. I don't think so. I think he'd like the Socceroos.
I tell you,
but
what
like
DS
most
has,
of us, we like the Socceroos, but we haven't really got a. We're not rusted on.
No, I'm still
Western Sydney Wanderer or a Sydney FC supporter. Like, no, we'll watch them, but we're not sort of going out.
I tell you what, DS does have,
Loz.
Unbelievable music choices. His music is 10 out of 10. You would be surprised.
Have you been listening to that playlist, Clark?
Mate, it's so good.
Wind up for the punt.
Your tunes are unreal.
I like that. You know what? That's.
I got my first glimpse of that. Remember, you took over the Spotify on the boat.
Yes.
And that was my first glimpse. I was like, hang on.
Yeah, no.
We got very similar music tastes.
Well, you know what? That's giving me a little tingle, pup. The fact that an Australian captain has just said, mate, you know, that's one thing I pride myself on, the tunes.
Good on the tunes. Oh, you're definitely first invited to any party.
Oh,
DJ.
How good.
DJ,
how good.
DS.
Get me on the decks.
Yeah, get him on the decks.
On the decks.
Oh, decks, sorry.
What did Loz say? What's that?
No, but Loz, you've got a bit about that, though, Loz. You'll take charge of the...
I'll take charge of any...
Yeah,
music.
Raiders song. You've got to play the Raiders song every time
that
Loz is around.
That gets a run. Simply the best.
Oh, sure, it comes off to that. Yeah.
But how good's music, like music in general? I know we've all got different tastes.
Gets you up and about.
Gets you up and about.
Can't
just gets you in
it.
A good mood. And then do you boys get into the lyrics? Like, do you start to, you know,
yeah,
really?
And if you don't know them, just make them up.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right.
I don't know all the words to any songs, but I just add a few in.
Well, I like that. So there you go. Let's give the old Spotify players a plug. There you go. So I created, you know, when I created that, boys, I was coming home from Brisbane. Mm-hmm. And I was doing a gig with Marlo, and Marlo and I would often, we'd share songs to try and pump each other up. We'd sort of, you know, because we were a bit flat.
Mm. And I Marlo's music tastes to be opposite to yours.
No, no way. No, no, no.
Really?
Marlo's, yeah, yeah. Actually, that's what we were filthy, well, not filthy, but we were disappointed that Rufus played on Friday night.
You didn't go.
In Sydney. Well, we were in Mudgee, so we had to have our own little Mudgee party.
Yeah, Rufus,
you've never heard of Rufus, Loz?
I know their songs. Well, I know their songs.
You
probably wouldn't, Loz. Your son would, though.
They're good fun.
They are unbelievable. I could see Loz with the glasses on from the servo. A
couple
at Rufus,
of glow sticks.
Glow stick. Just in the days, mate, looking up at centre point at Westfield.
Techno music.
How good. You come out and go, gee, those trees are talking to me. How good.
It's called house music.
Yeah, it's modern, Loz. Yeah, you wouldn't know it.
Modern house. Do you know, here's a fun fact for you, Pup and Middo and Loz, that one of the blokes in Rufus used to be a sound operator here at Sky.
Yep.
You're joking.
He was upstairs. He used to control the sound on Sky One. And the guys tell me, there's a few guys that still work here when he was around. They tell me that they would play Rufus at the Chatswood, not the Chatswood. What's the big pub on the corner?
Crow's Nest.
They'd play at the Crowy. And that would be like a Wednesday night, and there'd be like five people there, and they'd all be from Sky, and they'd go along and watch this band. And now they're all living in LA and rolling in it and just having the best life. Wouldn't you just love to be...
All start somewhere, DS.
It all does start somewhere. It does start somewhere.
That's it.
Now, on the show today, on Racing HQ, as we dream about being Rufus, they'd be going well, wouldn't they? Mark Noonan, Mitch Cohen, Matt Smith, Tracy Bartley, Anthony Cummings, and Brett Gilding from Inglis. I'm co-hosted with Marlo. He's still a little bit filthy on me, boys, but he's come good. Well, as you know, he was under the pump on Saturday. He was right under the pump, and we had the Stanley shenanigans. He wasn't backing up at all. I don't know if we can get his mic on. I'm not sure, but...
Marital troubles, Dave.
He wasn't backing up. But I got him a treat. I don't know why I did this, but I got him a treat. He was meant to be there, and everyone was saying, Where's Marlo? I said, well, look, he's under the pump. He's had a big Friday, and he couldn't back up. He did eventually turn up at the pub, but we needed to give him some encouragement. So actually what I did was I gave out his number on the PA at the pub. No joke. And I said, his number. The person who gives him the best spray via text or voicemail is going to get two free jugs here. And you know what? It actually spurred him on because he started receiving all these text messages from people, and they weren't too offensive. There were some actual clever ones there. And lo and behold, then he walks in a bit dishevelled, but he
arrived.
Well,
you know what
I like
about blokes, Dave, and Marlo in particular, and you're another one, I must say, when you get a little bit of prodding, you'll produce.
Yeah, you do.
So you might be flat, but you cop a little bit of criticism.
Yeah.
And then you just fire up, and then you're best on ground.
He was not very well. He was in a bad... I had to pick him up from the hotel on Saturday morning, and I've never seen a bloke look more just in the horrors. And apologies, I don't know what street we're on in Mudgee, but I apologise to the people who own that property, because Marlo says, pull over, and I said, what's wrong?
No.
And he was... but the thing is, it wasn't so much what was happening, it was more the noise. There was nothing actually coming out of his body. It was just this noise like a demon was coming out, so I don't know what exactly he did to himself on Friday night, but he did back up, and we had a wonderful time in Mudgee, and we're going to have a good show today, and... Go and put some Rufus on, Loz, and just crank it on the way home.
Do yourself a favour in the car, Loz.
Actually, get that playlist. So, by the way, that playlist, if you jump on Spotify, it's called Winding Up for the Punt. Winding Up for the Punt.
Love it.
And next time you have a party, Pup, can I come and DJ?
Yes.
How good. Actually, Marlo and I.
What are you doing for New Year's, actually? Actually, let's have that conversation later. Have a good day.
Oh, I like it. How good. There you go. I've just got this vision of Loz. With these servo glasses on, just absolutely flying at Rufus. Have a good day, boys. It is 9:01. Let's get to the news.